How's it feel to have traffic again? We went months without traffic.
Yeah.
Now you got traffic again.
Just gets in the way of the rest of my job.
Well, you got traffic again. It's Tuesday, June 9th, 2020. I'm Dave Congleton. You know what my life is like here? I got a text here. I should just start reading off the phone numbers. Or we should do a segment where I just call these people. Here's one. After what we just did at 5:54, person texts in, far left biased radio station. I've got 4 hours today. I've got four guests. Three of them are conservative. Three out of four of my guests today are conservative. I just gave this guy an hour to defend himself. And I had to go, yeah, far left biased radio station. That's right. That's me. That's me. Look who's here. The unbiased Matt Hoy. Mr. Hoy, how are you?
Oh, no. I admit it. You're probably just overcompensating for all the other days.
And how many times? You've been on a couple dozen times. I reached out to you. I included you in the family.
I've hosted for you.
You've hosted for me?
I don't think Pepper's going to allow me to do that again, but we won't go into that.
No, I make the decisions. I pick the guest hosts. You don't? Why? Why? What'd you do? Something I don't know about? Do I need?
Oh,
to,
you know about it.
Do I need to start listening to the guest hosts?
It was taken care of, but I was worried I may have been blacklisted.
Oh, no. Hey, the Tribune, that's pretty tough news. Joe Tirica wrote an announcement today that the Tribune is shutting down their office. All the reporters and everybody have been working at home because of COVID-19, but now they've decided to extend that to the end of the year. And so they've just shut down the office on Tank Farm Road. And if they decide to go back to the old model, they're just going to look for new space. Comment on that. You used to write for them.
Yes, unpaid. I was unpaid writing for them. You know, it frankly doesn't surprise me. I mean, the money in journalism nowadays is so tight that, you know, they could probably get by with just, you know, renting a, you know, they've got those, you know, where you can rent an office or something. They're probably, you know, fine with just like renting a meeting room, you know, once a week, you know, to have, you know, birthday parties or something and meetings and whatnot.
Staff
they don't
meetings.
Have a press. Mm-hmm. They don't print the paper here. The press is gone. The pressmen are gone. Does anybody still buy classified ads? I don't think very many people buy classified ads since Craigslist existed. Why would you go into the newspaper? You don't need to physically visit the newspaper. So it's not surprising. If that's a way, frankly, if that's a way you can cut overhead and spend that on reporters and salaries and you know, equipment that helps, that improves your journalism, whether that's photography equipment or drones, that sort of stuff, I think money's better spent that way.
Well, and the other thing is that, as I mentioned yesterday, Monica Vaughn, who I've considered their top reporter, she left last month, and she's now been promoted. She's at the Fresno Bee, so she got promoted to that paper. It makes me wonder if they're going to replace that position or get by with one less reporter. What do you think about that?
I don't like it. I've been on here before, and I've told you about, you know, a newspaper I used to work at up in Washington State, the Daily World out of Aberdeen. At one time, that covered entire Grays Harbor County, and I think we covered Pacific County as well, just to the south. And we had a newsroom with two full-time photographers, probably about 12 to 14 reporters of various stripes. And when I went up there a couple of years ago to see a friend and just kind of pass through town, they're down to an editor and a sports reporter, and that's it.
Yeah. See, I don't think they're going to replace her.
It broke my heart.
I don't think they're going to replace her.
That would be, well, I have seen job postings. I'm looking for a reporter. I've seen them online because, you know, I'm looking for work too. Would they hire me? Not a chance in H-E double hockey sticks.
Now,
yeah.
Here's the story we're going to talk about. James Bennett, resigned on Sunday from his job as the editorial page editor of the New York Times after the newspaper opinion section, which he oversaw, published a much-criticized op-ed piece by a U.S. senator calling for a military response to civic unrest in American cities. Give us the background on this, please, Matt. The op-ed was written, was it by Tom Cotton? Yeah.
It was written by Tom Cotton.
Of Arkansas.
Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. He is a former, he's a decorated military man. He was in the Army Infantry. He is a Harvard Law graduate. I know he's a Harvard graduate. I think it's Harvard Law.
Yeah.
Not a fringe right-wing nut job on, you know, Twitter or Facebook. He had made some, I'm not sure whether he made the argument on the floor of Congress or he'd been interviewed or something about it, but he had made the case that if these cities cannot stop the rioting, if they are incapable of doing it, then President Trump should invoke the Insurrection Act and send the military to help them. And the Insurrection Act was passed in 1807, I believe, and it was first used by George Washington to put down the Whiskey Rebellion. Okay, it's old. It was most recently used in 1992 by then-President Bush the first to put down the Los Angeles riots in the wake of the Rodney King verdict.
I remember that.
So it's not unheard of. I saw a guy on Twitter say, "Historian here, this is exactly the sort of thing that the founding that would have outraged the founding fathers." It's like George Washington did it.
Right, and
I'm not sure I want to take a history class from
yeah.
you.
But the op-ed piece was called "Send in the Troops."
Yeah, that was the headline. The writers don't write the headlines usually, but that was the headline. He wasn't suggesting that they start shooting protesters or anything like that. It was to control the looting. So after that runs and gets put online,
let me just ask you: was that solicited by the New York Times?
The New York Times approached him and asked him to write it.
Okay.
And there were, and you know, anyone who submitted anything of this sort to any newspaper kind of knows the process. You submit it. They come back, well, what evidence do you have for that? You know, should we say this? Change wording? I mean, that used to happen even like with letters to the editor. I had a letter to the editor published in the New York Times at one point back in the mid-90s. And there were three or four emails sent back and forth to change wording and everything, and they published it. Surprise, surprise. but things are changing there, obviously. But yeah, they solicited it. It went through some back and forth, and then once it was published online, apparently there were a cadre of New York Times reporters. And again, this is the editorial page, and there's a long-standing kind of division at newspapers between the news pages and the editorial pages.
Sure.
When I was at the Union Tribune down in San Diego, the editorial offices were on the fourth floor, the newsroom offices were on the third, and never the twain shall meet, or rarely the twain shall meet. If they were interviewing someone like the governor, the editorial board was, you know, interviewing Arnold Schwarzenegger, they interview them in the editorial board offices, and a couple reporters would come out to sit in and do the news story on it. But there wasn't a whole lot of cross-pollination going on.
Yeah, and you see that at the Wall Street Journal, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that way at the vast majority of papers.
All right.
So some news reporters started raising Cain, saying that the op-ed endangered the lives of black New York Times reporters.
Because?
And words are violence, Dave. That's about as sane as this gets. Words are violence, and violence are words. It's I feel like George Orwell, you know, could has, you know, what, attach a turbine to his grave and he could power a small city. But, you know, they started protesting and it got louder and louder. The initial response was, hey, you know, it's the job of an op-ed page to print a variety of views. And, you know, this is a view that is shared by, you know, some polling at the time had it like 58% of Americans, were in favor of using the military if local police departments couldn't handle it. This is a view that a large number of Americans share.
Right, but
they may not be a large number of New York Times readers, but we want to expose those readers to these other ideas. We don't want to be an echo chamber.
Right, but let's be clear about this as I get ready to take the break, Matt Hoy, is that the New York Times approached this senator from Arkansas and asked him to write an opinion piece. He wrote this opinion piece. It was published, and there was such an uproar from many of the reporters because mm-hmm. of the content of the editorial, that it was the opinion page editor who is no longer employed at the New York Times.
Right. He resigned, but, you know, that's asked to step down. He was fired.
All right. Hold that thought. We'll be back and talk about the larger repercussions. And there's some other examples, too, I want to make sure we get to. I'm Dave Congleton along with Matt Hoy. You're listening to Hometown Radio. You have landed on the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. California Headline News and ABC Radio News await us at the bottom of the hour. We're talking about the news and some strange things that are happening here as we are back with Matt Hoy. And by the way, Matt, put a plug in for your website, please.
Yeah, website is hoystory.com, HOYSTORY.com. And the top post right there is kind of a series of links and whatnot to what we're talking about right now. So if people are interested, want to look at that Tom Cotton article, want to see the New York Times own follow-ups on it and what happened, the links are all there for them.
All right, now let's throw this other example before the news break, and because this also just happened, and it's a Philadelphia Inquirer. What's the story there, Matt?
Well, the story there was, you know, there have been, you know, riots and looting and destruction in Philadelphia as well over this past, you know, week and a half or so. And an article by the paper's architecture critic, and I guess I should be happy that a paper can afford to have an architecture critic nowadays.
Yeah really.
The original headline in the print version of the paper was, buildings matter too, and the subhead was, yes, they can be rebuilt while lives are forever lost, but that doesn't mean they will be. And so it included a couple pictures of the destruction and whatnot. That caused all sorts of problems there. The headline on it, if you go to online right now, actually says, damaging buildings disproportionately hurts the people protesters are trying to uplift.
Is that a headline or a mouthful? Oh, jeez.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't have fit. You would have had to shrink the headline down. It really wouldn't have fit on the page. But, you know, online, you've got all the words you want. And so there was, again, outrage over that. The architecture critic wasn't fired, but the paper's editor resigned.
Why? What reason was given?
It's you know, I think it was like loss of confidence in the newsroom and whatnot. I'm trying to read the story, blah, blah, blah. He said he's decided to step down. No successor was named. They're going to search for somebody. But yeah. It's... discontent among the newspaper staff, basically.
Look at it. Yeah. He resigned, I can't pronounce it, Stan Wyschnowski resigned
as
top editor of the Philadelphia Inquirer days after an article in the newspaper about the effects of protests on the urban landscape carried the headline, Buildings Matter Too. The headline prompted an apology published in the Inquirer, a heated staff meeting, and a sick out by dozens of reporters at the paper.
Yeah. You know, I'm not opposed to criticize, you know, to people criticizing decisions and whatnot made in newspapers. I've done it before. When I was at the San Diego Union Tribune, I'm not sure if you remember this, the Danish Muhammad cartoons. Familiar with that little controversy?
Yep.
Our paper, you know, that there was an uproar about that because this newspaper in Denmark had published these cartoons of Muhammad. Most of them were kind of blah. They weren't really outrageous. There was one that had, you know, his head covering looked like a bomb, but there were others that, you know, you wouldn't know that's Muhammad unless they said it was a cartoon of Muhammad. It just looked like some Arab guy. When I was at the Union Tribune, we basically made this big thing about, you know, we're not going to republish those cartoons or show our readers those cartoons, because of our respect for the Muslim community. And it's offensive to them. No. 2 days later, our arts section published a screen cap from South Park of Jesus, and it was kind of offensive to Christians. And all of a sudden, that caring about the values and just doing things to outrage people. It's okay if it's Christians who aren't going to bomb your building, but it's not okay if it's Muslims who have a history of doing that sort of thing in other countries and here, too.
Matt Hoy on this broadcast on the Stolberg Law KVC text line. Tom writes, an opinion piece, any opinion piece is just that, opinion. I think those reporters are 100% prima donnas. In my opinion, their decision to leave the New York Times is sophomoric.
Yeah, and that's the concern, is that you are getting a generation of reporters who have gone through journalism schools at various parts of the country and colleges where professors have to give trigger warnings. And if I hear a contrary view, then I'm going to complain to the administration and this, that, and the other thing. And they've been taught in that environment. And, you know, we all joke, well, just wait until you get out in the real world. And they get out in the real world and they expect the same. And the older people, you know, the older veterans in a lot of these newsrooms, sadly, including, you know, leadership. And again, this, you know, James Bennett was left after the publisher of the newspaper abandoned him and basically reversed course.
Yeah.
So, you know, I worry that we get to the point where it's echo chambers on both sides, and we don't have we've had this problem the past few years too, where, you know, Trump says plenty of stuff.
You're gonna have to hold that thought, Matt Hoy. I got the news. We got to catch that. Speaking of news, Matt Hoy is here. HoyStory.com is his website. We'll go to the phones and your text messages. Has reporting become too politically correct? It's appearing that way. I'm Dave Congleton. Stick around. Do me a favor. Be sure to start your Wednesday morning off with First Look. Andy Morrison, Mr. Scott Taylor have you covered with everything you need to know to get you out the door from 6 to 9, followed by Mr. Rush Limbaugh from 9 until noon. We have the always entertaining Mark Wilson from noon until 2. Give you a little dose of Dave Ramsey from 2 until 3. And then Craig and I will be back at 3:05 with a Wednesday edition of Hometown Radio. We are in conversation with Matt Hoy. His website is hoystory.com. We're talking about what is going on in specifically newspapers these days. We've had examples with both the New York Times and the Philadelphia Inquirer where, I guess, for political correctness, top editors are losing their jobs. Craig, you wanted to comment on this. What's your take?
Yeah, if they want to walk out, fire them. Gone. Get rid of them. I mean,
you have the reporters.
Yeah, you have so many reporters in this country who are trying to find work in this day and age, like Matt, like probably many at the Tribune as it seems to be downsizing. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of qualified people that want to take these jobs. And if you have your feelings hurt and want to walk out, you need to learn that you are replaceable. You are expendable, and there's plenty of people that will come that are willing to step up and do your job.
Kind of like their attitude here at American General Media.
Yeah, and I don't blame them for that. If you're going to say, if you do it, don't do it my way, I'm leaving, bye.
Yeah. What do you say to that, Matt?
Ideally, that is what they would do. I'm not sure why they don't. If you are a reporter at the New York Times that felt that op-ed endangered your life, why would you want to work there?
That's the argument, that because the senator was calling for U.S. troops to come into the cities, these reporters would have to go out, and that was making their job more dangerous because the troops would be there.
Yeah.
But if the troops weren't there to provide stability and they're out there, wouldn't a looter or a rioter also put them in danger? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I really do appreciate the reporters who have been out there covering these protests. The sad state of affairs is that a lot of those reporters have to watch their front and their back, because a lot of them are getting abused by police, and a lot of them are getting abused by protesters. And they are, you know, an island in that storm. And I really do appreciate what they do. It's not easy. Yeah. But this sort of reaction to an op-ed piece is frankly insane.
I can't compare it to anything. Craig, anything else you want to say about this?
No, I kind of made my case, I guess you would say.
So on the Stolberg Law KVC text line, listeners writing in, this cancel culture is out of control. Newspapers should always have that one guy that bucks whatever bias the paper may have. They should be, difference of opinion should be celebrated.
You'd like that? The New York Times hired a woman who had wanted to kill all white men and had written that before she got a job as an editorial writer at the New York Times. You had Kevin Williamson, who I wish I could write like that guy, who is a reporter at National Review, who had been hired by The Atlantic to, again, offer kind of a view that readers of The Atlantic don't often hear. And Ta-Nehisi Coates, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right, who's also at The Atlantic, said, hey, that was a great hire. And then they go start looking through their background. And shocker, shocker, the guy coming from National Review is a conservative. So he was employed by The Atlantic for 3 days before he was fired. He didn't write anything for The Atlantic in those 3 days. You've got, you know, the other place that's a little more subtle, Andrew Sullivan, who used to be editor at the New Republic, or no, at The Atlantic, I believe. Maybe The New Republic, too.
I thought it was The New Republic.
He's a gay man. He is a Obama fan. He thinks Trump's doing horrible things for the country. He doesn't fit neatly in a liberal box. He's on Bill Maher's show pretty often.
Yeah.
He writes for New York Magazine, and he tweeted out a few days ago that his column would not be appearing this week. And apparently it's because he wanted to write something on these protests, and his contract says that basically he not only can he, if New York Magazine turns him down, he's not allowed to take it anywhere else. And so And in addition, there's a little piece on this at The Spectator, which is a conservative magazine, but you know, it's on their version of slow new time shredder type thing. And talk about how apparently Sullivan has to run his columns by a handful of quote-unquote sensitive junior editors to make sure it doesn't trigger them before the magazine will publish it. And, you know, he's a guy who has, better bona fides, journalistic bona fides than any of those junior editors.
Right. So
it's just, what will trigger them? And so, I'm not saying all this just because a decade and a half ago, Andrew Sullivan called me a superb blogger.
So what happened to his column for the week?
You're not going to, they didn't publish one. I mean, it's similar to what happened to me at the Tribune when I wrote a column, basically, to coincide with the start of the school year for Cal Poly students, and the article was, don't be dumb, and I referred to the incident where they partied on top of a garage and it collapsed.
I remember that. Yeah,
and in that original article, I also said, young ladies, watch out for each other. Don't let, your friend go to a party, get drunk, and walk home with a stranger. Stay with your friends. And I referenced what happened to Kristen Smart. And I said, 999,999 times out of a million, maybe the worst that happens, sadly, is that you might get raped. But it can also happen that you disappear and you're never seen again.
Mm.
And, that's advice to, girls. You right. need to stick together.
Right, and so the column got killed?
There are, that part got deleted because I was blaming Kristen Smart for her own death. And I was not.
But I've neglected to invite our listeners. If you want to join us for Matt Hoy, please do. 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832 as we talk about what's happening with newspapers right now, whether or not they have become too politically correct, too much of a part of the cancel culture. I'm going to edit this text basically on the Stolberg line. The listener is suggesting that it's a good thing if there are fewer liberal reporters at newspapers.
I think newspapers should represent their communities. I really do. And newspapers tend to strive for that, but typically when they do that, it's skin deep. Depending on your community, they want people. If you're in Detroit or something, they want a lot of African Americans on their staff. They really do make attempts to make sure that newsrooms aren't lily white. Having said that, they don't care about the politics of their reporters. They don't seek out a diversity of political, social, religious views among their reporters. The conceit is that, you're a reporter, you strive to be unbiased. At least that used to be. I'm not sure that's the case anymore.
I think that's been thrown out the window. I don't think that exists anymore.
And if you go to my site, hoystory.com, there's a long article by Ben Smith, the New York Times, which talks about that. And I really do recommend your readers check out that story. But yeah, I mean, you get to a point where there's a liberal bubble in a lot of these places, whether they admit it or not. So, you've had Joe Tarik on. You should invite him back on again. I'm not sure, depending on how busy he is. Fish don't know they're wet. And if that is all you encounter, and again, getting rid of, trying to memory hole this Tom Cotton op-ed, op-ed is an effort to kind of purify and put a cocoon around what your readers see. And that does our body politic a huge disservice. And I think that's both ways. If all you read is, you know, National Review and the Washington Examiner, or, you know, at the time, the Weekly Standard or something like that, and you don't read anything at the New York Times, or you don't read the Atlantic Magazine, or, you know, any, if you cocoon yourself, I think that hurts our body politic. And if mainstream newspapers are doing that, and I think they are, then, you know, I'm not sure what I suspect the future is going to be more of what we see, where it's very fragmented, where conservatives go to right-wing sites and liberals go to left-wing sites, and there isn't a common place where we can all talk together.
But what about newspapers themselves? Is there a future for the traditional? I mean, I went to the newsstand, and not to pick out the Tribune, but just as an example, they're charging $2 for a 10-page paper. I'm not spending that money. I'll just go read it online.
Yeah, that's sad. I'm not sure. You know, I was at a wedding a decade ago, and someone was asking me, Matt, when are newspapers going to go bye-bye? When are they going to disappear? And these were this was a couple who was my parents' age. I'd known them my entire life. I grew up with their kids. And I, you know, said, kind of excuse the bluntness, but newspapers will stop when you're dead. When that baby boomer generation is mostly in the ground, we won't have printed newspapers anymore.
All right, we're joined by Matt Hoy. His website is hoystory.com, talking about what's happening with newspapers these days and the bias, the cancel culture that has creeped onto the pages. We'll come back for a final segment. I'm Dave Congleton. This is radio. We're doing just great. AM 920, FM 96.5, News Talk, KVEC. If you want in on this conversation with Mr. Matt Hoy, we would need to hear from you now, please. 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. Website is hoystory.com. As back to you, we were talking earlier, Matt, about reporters, their bias is becoming more and more evident. I think that's particularly clear in this recent years with Trump. I mean, I don't think the press tries to hold back anymore on their feelings towards the guy.
No, and frankly, that's a tragedy. You know, and there's a couple of different kind of prongs to this. The first is, you know, there's less effort to treat people fairly, to frankly, and I'm not, you know, and Trump may have lost this to a long time ago too, but to not always assume the worst of intentions of everyone that's politically different from you. And another part of it's, you know, a lot of editors, you know, older editors, you know, mid-career people, have been wiped out. Newspaper copy desks are almost non-existent. And you get a lot of reporters in their early to mid 20s who history started in 2016. And, you know, some of the, you know, Trump rails against the press, and some of his criticisms are valid and a lot of them aren't. But you get reporters and talking heads, you know, warning, oh, the coming fascism of Trump. Trump's going to do this. He's going to do that. You know, Trump hasn't tossed any reporter in jail. Trump has not gotten the phone records of any reporter that we know of. He has not named any reporter an unindicted co-conspirator in espionage. And both of those last two things were things the last president did.
But let's come back to the media. And my argument there is, Matt, is that I think what the national media has done, and maybe even local media, I don't know, they have carved out what their audience is going to be. Like MSNBC is, to me, the perfect example. We are going to be the anti-Trump network. We're going to be the counterpart to Fox. And we don't even care about being fair anymore. We're going to have an activist agenda, and we're going to go after Trump, and that's how we're going to get our ratings.
Yeah, and at that point, you've lost half your audience, and even when you are right, and even when you try and play it down the middle, if there's anybody there that still tries to do that, people won't believe you. I mean, I sent you the link to that case about the miracle cure that Trump had been pitching for the COVID-19, I forget what it's called.
The hydroxychloroquine?
that one, the hydroxychloroquine or whatever. And, the Guardian newspaper, which is a left-wing British-based newspaper, did some research and found out that the company that there had been a study published in The Lancet and a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine relying on data from this company that has, it's not clear where they got the data, and it may just be made up, but it includes one doctor, a couple other employees, including one who's an adult model. And they did these studies saying, well, if you take this stuff, it's like drinking bleach. That's, kind of prompted Joe Biden to say that Trump was, taking bleach. Well, they did some research, and they found out that it looks like all of the data those studies were based on is bogus. It's made up out of whole cloth. And the impact of that was, and, again, skeptical journalists didn't, discover that till a couple months later. And it's only a handful of them that did that. But in the meantime, you had real doctors, real epidemiologists, real researchers trying to figure out, okay, does this stuff work? And they couldn't get people to participate in the study because of the lies from this one, I think the company is called Surgisphere. And, that has a real impact on public health. And, if your readers haven't heard much of that, about that, that's frankly kind of a tragedy, and you think it'd be a bigger deal, but it might cast Trump in, if not necessarily a good light, at least not an as evil, insane, bleach-drinking light. And we can't have that.
On the Stolberg Law KVC text line, listener wants to know where Matt Hoy gets his news from. What are your primary news sources?
I read The New York Times, I read The Wall Street Journal, I read The Washington Post, I read National Review, I read The Federalist, .com, I read The Washington Examiner, .com, I read The Washington Free Beacon, which is at freebeacon.com. Some are liberal, some are conservative. The nice thing is I kind of know where they're coming from, so I know how to adjust what they say and temper sometimes, the facts and what, or, temper their spin.
Tom is texting in, Lancet has withdrawn the negative hydroxychloroquine study.
Right. Yeah, it has. It did that in the past few days after the Guardian, I think it was Guardian.us report came out. It was reported at sciencemag.com as well, which I think is at sciencecom.com. And yeah, I mean, better late than never, but here was an opportunity. And another thing talking about journalists and their credibility. We've been told for two plus months, stay home, right? And the people who were protesting about opening businesses back up, they were ripped in the media for all sorts of reasons. both by medical, you know, not, it's not just journalists who are losing their credibility, but medical professionals were ripping these people too. And then all of a sudden, there is a protest that they agree with, and their concerns about us, you know, having a second wave or an epidemic or being not having enough hospital beds and whatnot. It's like, well, there's a bigger issue here.
Well, that's why I'm still trying to figure out about last Friday night in San Luis. There were 3,000 people downtown. No social distancing. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them wore masks. I give them that. But it's like, is COVID-19, is it important now or not? Can we just forget about it? I'm totally confused.
The Tribune ran an op-ed earlier today from a Democratic assemblyman and a state senator, I think, you know, warning about easing restrictions. It's like, and I'm sitting there wondering, when did this first get submitted and published? Because it seems like that horse has left the barn.
And this horse is about to leave the barn. Matt Hoy, your website is hoystory.com. Always good to hear from you. I can give you about 30 seconds for a final thought, sir.
I love newspapers. I love the news business. I am saddened by what it is becoming, and I'm not sure it can be saved. I think we're just going to be more and more, you know, niche journalism and more divided, and I don't think that's good for American politics.
All right, hoystory.com. Check it out. Matt, thanks for joining us. We'll talk again.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that is going to do it for us today. Thank you again to my texter. Thank you to my three conservative guests, Matt Hoy, my brother Bruce, and John Hackelman. Also, thanks to Bob Sachs. Thanks to Craig Hill, as always, for all his help. Good to have him back. And thanks to you for listening. If you've missed any of these segments, podcasts will be up shortly online at 920kvec.com. Have a great night. Have a great day tomorrow. We'll do it again at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver, get out of my chair. I'm coming home. Good night.